Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about the harsh realities of real estate investing.
Yeah, boy, this is going to be an episode all about investing in real estate. And, you know, we're not going to paint too rosy of a picture when it comes to real estate. Although, I think we're going to give it a fair shake.
Yeah, you and that's coming from
we are two guys
who've done it ourselves.
Who own investment properties ourselves. But we're going to talk all about real estate. We're going to discuss how you can know whether or not investing in real estate is the right thing for you, as well as just some simple ways that you can consider getting started with investing in real estate.
And the way you have to think about it has changed since we started investing in real estate, what, 15 years ago? So
no, has it been that long?
I think it's been close to that long. We're getting old, bud.
Holy crap.
I know.
Okay, before we get to real estate.
My wife keeps telling me, oh, look at all the grays in your hair. I'm like, stop.
Yeah, okay,
enough.
You're not helping out here. I wanted to ask you, basically, I think I've got a frugal or cheap here for you. So you know that I like a variety of different craft beers in my life.
Yeah.
I think anybody listening to the show know that that's something that you and I both enjoy. In particular, I am a fan of singles. Anytime I go to the package shop or wherever and they've got the shelf or the multiple shelves full of the singles there, I like to spend some time looking at those because it's just a great way to try to kind of dip your toes into some of that variety without committing to a six pack.
Can I just say, the worst thing in the world is when I go into a package store and my wife's like, you got 5 minutes, get in and out. And I'm like, no, I need like 20.
Then let's just go ahead and turn
it's
around.
It's amazing. It's not like there's that much turnover in the beer section, but I have to look at every single item like every time.
Absolutely.
It's an obsession.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was at a local package shop here in our new part of town. This is a package store that folks have definitely recommended. In fact, I'm not going to name them, but you yourself have also been to this package shop.
Okay.
So I went in there and I saw a couple that looked pretty solid and I thought, oh, I'm going to try those out. Took them home, cracked it open, and one of them, dude, was awful.
Oh, really?
Like, terrible.
And it wasn't just the beer, it was old?
And it wasn't because I did not like the style of that particular beer, and it wasn't because it wasn't from a brewery that wasn't solid in and of themselves. Like, this was a fantastic brewery. And I thought, man, that's so weird. And I checked the label, and this beer was from 2017.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so, I mean, some beers can be bottle conditioned, like the spontaneously fermented beers are like, you know, you can let it age for 1 to 3 years.
I've still got a Cantillon. It's like a decade old that I brought back from, from Amsterdam.
You might have a bottle of vinegar.
No. It says on the bottle that you can hang on to like 20.
Super higher quality ones evolve. So all that to say, would you go back to that package store and ask for your money back?
Okay. I would go back if I was in the vicinity and it wasn't a big deal, but I wouldn't drive back there just to return my $4 beer.
I will definitely go back. Well, and it was a drain pour. I mean, we literally didn't
finish
drinking it.
But I had the same experience.
I dumped it out because I couldn't drink the dang thing.
Yeah.
So I've only literally ever been there once. But the next time I go back there, I've decided I'm not going to return it, but I am going to let them know and say, hey, you know, I just want to let you know the last time I was here, I bought a beer and it was, 6 years old?
Yeah.
It was not drinkable. It was very bad. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would definitely mention it to them. And I'm curious if it's the same place.
I want them to be able to do better.
Because I had the same experience. I bought a Bissell Brothers beer, which I know I love, and it was old and it was trash. And I was just super disappointed. I just haven't been back to that place. So, but yeah, again, if it's not just going back, like wasting a half hour of your time to return a $4 beer.
It's not like trekking across to the other side of the city or anything like that. This is close by.
But that's pretty crappy.
Yeah. Bottle shops. I want them to do better because
toss your old beers.
I'm thinking about the other guys out there, the other ladies who are also interested in craft beer. And what if this is a style, or maybe they're just getting into it and they're thinking the same thing that I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just going to go with one of these singles to try out this new style. And they're thinking, oh, this is terrible. I can't believe folks out there are drinking this.
Yeah.
Exactly. I want them to be able to deliver a quality product. So I think I'm going to say something next time I go in there.
Cool.
Not sure if it's going to change anything.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out, and I think you can do it nicely, but and hopefully they'll give you your money back, because that's ridiculous to be selling
a little bonus
a 6-year-old IPA. Sorry to hear about your crummy experience.
I'll be all right.
Yeah. One other thing to do is you could literally just like TP their establishment one night in the middle of the night.
Just firebomb them.
Yeah. So just in case you don't want to test fate. Maybe you'll end up in prison. Maybe you'll just get away with it.
I'm not going to choose violence.
All right. Well, let's mention the beer that we're having on today's episode. Hopefully this one isn't a piece of crap. I don't think it is. This one is it's called US Alive, or Us Alive. I don't know. By McKellar Brewing. We'll give our thoughts on this one at the end. Since this is a wild ale, even if it's old, I'm sure it's going to taste great. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the subject at hand. We're talking about the harsh realities of real estate investing. And for some reason, I don't know, made me think of homeschooling. Because there's this like massive change, this massive shift. More people are homeschooling than ever before. And when you decide whether or not you want to homeschool your kids, it depends on so many factors, right? Like the school that your kids are going to now, your goals for your family and your career, the resources that are available to you, how much school choice you have available in your state. Can you send your kid to another public school that's around the corner that you're not necessarily zoned for, that's not the closest one to you? There are lots of helpful resources now, including an abundance of co-ops for people who want to do homeschooling. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the trade-offs are less severe than they used to be like 20 years ago when a couple of my friends were getting homeschooled, right? Gosh, I guess that was more like 30 years ago. But but when you look at the numbers, actually, the proportion of homeschooled children in the U.S., it basically doubled from 2.8% before the pandemic to 5.4% in the 2020-2021 school year. There's just a massive influx, a massive movement towards homeschooling, which makes sense to me because lots of parents, they got more insight into what was going on, what was happening in their child's classroom, and they weren't loving it. Makes me think of just like how tough virtual school was for our family and for so many families out there. But homeschool also, it's not this slam dunk decision, right? Like we literally picked up and moved, at least in part for school reasons, and we still wanted our kids to have a public school experience, or at least an in-school person experience. But again, lots of factors to consider, right? And the same is true on the real estate investing front. We love that path for some people. It makes sense for some folks, for sure. We've done well as real estate investors ourselves, but we wanted to have a nuanced conversation to help folks decipher whether or not it's right for them. If they've kind of thought about it, it's somewhere in the recesses of their mind. They're like, maybe real estate investing will be right for me at some point, or I'm kind of starting to think about it now. Well, what factors do you need to consider? That's kind of what we want to talk about today.
That's right. And if you are listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that you want to grow your net worth. I'm going to assume that's true, right? And you might even be interested in some of the different ways, some of the different paths to achieve that goal. You're probably even thinking, if I can get there even faster, all the better. And so who hasn't heard that investing in real estate is a great path to take? He made all of his money in real estate. Like, that is literally something I've heard many times before. And unfortunately, it glosses over, though, the harsh realities of investing in real estate. The different real estate influencers out there, they can often make you feel like an idiot for not having taken the plunge yet, for not getting into the game. Mm-hmm. And given the number of folks who think of themselves as Zillow experts, it might be more tempting than ever to think that real estate investing is the natural next right step for you. But we'll offer a laundry list of things to consider before you start making offers. Our goal here is to not talk you out of investing in real estate if that's going to be, again, the right next step for you. But we just want to make sure that you've thought through all of the different factors before you take the plunge.
Yeah. Basically, we want to give you a realistic understanding of what it's going to take to actually make money as a real estate investor. And we want you to think through all of the good potential outcomes from investing in real estate, but the potential downsides as well, because they're significant, right? And just like I was talking about homeschooling, it's seen some significant changes. The reality that real estate investors are encountering in the market right now, well, it's dramatically changed over the past decade, over the past 10, 15 years. We used to talk about real estate investing a lot, Matt, early on in the podcast. We started the podcast 5.5 years ago, and it was a different ballgame 5.5 years ago when we were kind of pushing listeners in that direction with a little more vigor than we do now.
Sure.
Because the facts on the ground were different than they are in 2023. But when the reality on the ground changes, so does our advice. And it's not that real estate investing doesn't make sense for anyone at any point in time or for anyone right now, but the truth is that it just makes less sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense for far fewer folks given the current market dynamics, what's going on.
That's right. Yeah, and that's because home prices have gone up dramatically over the past few years, and interest rates have gone up in a major way over the past 12 months as well. We've talked about that last week. And inventory is essentially at all-time lows as well, which is also keeping prices inflated. And so this means that housing affordability, it's essentially the worst it's been in 40 years. Mm. This is specifically coming from data from the NAR, the National Association of Realtors. And so that doesn't mean that becoming a real estate investor is impossible, but timing does matter a little bit. Speaking of timing, you can't dollar cost average into a home purchase, right? Like you can when you're investing in the stock market. It's going to pay, and it matters a lot to understand the context and what is going on in the market around you. And even though rents have gone up as well, they just haven't kept pace with the rising prices. And so we're just in a tough market right now for folks hoping to buy a house, rent it out, and then turn that fat profit.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not as easy as it used to be. It felt like shooting fish in a barrel kind of in 2011, 2012, when housing prices were basically at their bottom.
Yeah.
But in addition to current trends, it's important to note that real estate doesn't perform as well as the market does from a return standpoint on a historical basis. So the wind is kind of in your face, just given kind of what's happening in the market as a whole. But it's kind of always in your face, actually, as a real estate investor.
But you're also hiking up a hill.
Yes, at the same time, right? So when you run the numbers, you see that the overall market returns are close to 10% from a historical returns standpoint, right? That's total stock market or S&P 500 funds, something like that. Over the years, that tends to be the average, different years, right? Different results. Last year, not even close to that. But real estate has returned something closer to 4% on average over time.
Significantly less than the overall market.
Yeah.
And that's 4% on average across the entire country on real estate,
yep.
Not necessarily for real estate investors.
So different markets will see different returns over time. And like we'll talk about later on in the episode, different investors, there are ways to increase that return as a real estate investor to do a lot better than the average. Basically, real estate investors, savvy ones, can take advantage of what's kind of a quirky market. It's so much more localized, and so people are able to use sweat equity and market inefficiencies to their advantage to juice returns. You see the 4% number, and you think, well, why would anybody ever invest in real estate? And it's like, well, yeah, like you said, Matt, it's because that's the average, and because there are significant ways to increase your returns in real estate, whereas when we talk about investing in the stock market, the boring take your 10% approach makes sense for the average investor, but real estate investors have outsized abilities to kind of control their own destiny and push those returns higher.
That's right. Yeah. So let's clear the air and talk about what real estate is not for a second. And first of all, one of the points, Joel, that you and I, we wanted to cover is that real estate is not passive.
Oh.
Yeah,
and that's a common thing. Like people are like, oh, come get your passive income over here, invest in real estate.
Like literally none of the steps to real estate investing include passivity. There is a lot of upfront work needed in order to educate yourself. And then there's getting hyper familiar with a local area to know when a deal pops up so that you can pounce on it. And then once you do have that place locked down, you've got to find good tenants. And landlords screw that part up all the time.
All the time. That's like the biggest reason, I think, why people who do invest in real estate, they get out of it so quickly.
They do a poor job screening tenants.
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, real estate investing is terrible. And they tell everybody they know that. But that's not necessarily the case. It's like, oh, you were bad at the most important thing.
So, I mean, bottom line, investing in real estate, it just takes a lot of energy and hustle. It is not passive income like some online marketers, like they might lead you to believe. We actually talked about real estate and whether or not it's passive in the episode where we talked about passive income. Is passive income a myth? We wanted to know if it was this elusive unicorn that was impossible to find. That was episode 353. If you're interested in other types of passive income.
I mean, passive income sounds so nice on the surface, but the reality is it takes a lot of hard work to get there.
Exactly. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the juice isn't worth the squeeze when it comes to real estate. But newbie landlords, they often make massive mistakes when it comes to finding that first property. And the stakes are incredibly high when you're mm-hmm. talking about sinking a ton of money that you've worked to save up into a down payment, not to mention like kind of all the other expenses oftentimes associated with a investment property.
Yeah. I mean, talk about the transaction cost of real estate. And if you get into it and you realize, wait, this wasn't a great buy. Oh, wait, now I need to get rid of it. You could be out tens of thousands of dollars, right? You could lose a lot of money on that one investment. And landlording isn't easy. That's important to note here. That's what makes it not passive. And you can say, well, I'm going to hire someone to do the landlording for me. I'm going to hire a property management company. Well, that might work out for you, but that's going to cost money too. It's going to reduce returns. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's passive either. And so whether it's underestimating, you know, what repairs are going to cost or screening tenants poorly, like you mentioned, Matt, we don't want people to be fooled by the passive income claims that people are making all over the internet when it comes to investing in real estate. But another important distinction to make is that real estate is not a diversified investment. You know, we're talking about putting a lot of money into a single investment. So you're betting a lot of marbles, you're taking a big swing, and if it's a big swing and a whiff, this could cost you in a big way. So it's just important to know that circumstances outside of your control can impact your investment. Like, what if your town's major employer closes up shop? What if they move elsewhere? Depending on the size of that town, it can have a significant impact on local housing demand and rent levels. There are things outside of your control as a real estate investor. What if a crappy neighbor with like three Doberman Pinschers moves in next door and they're really loud and noisy and they bite, they're like snapping at people as you walk by?
Why are you hating on Doberman Pinschers?
I'm just saying, man. Like, you never, these are the kind of things that can happen that can actually inhibit your property from attracting the good tenants, from rising in value like you're hoping. You kind of don't know there are things out of your control as a real estate investor. It doesn't mean that like you said, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, that it's not worth looking into owning rental real estate, but there are a lot of other factors you need to consider, and there's more risk, the stakes are just higher.
Yeah. And I mean, what you're talking about are externalities essentially. But in addition to that, even there are intrinsic factors to a given specific property as well, because mm-hmm. you can do all the research in the world and you might have nothing externally impacting your investment. But the fact is, we're talking about diversity here, diversification, and with a singular investment, and so it just might not pan out like you might expect it to, right? Yeah. Like maybe it doesn't quite have the curb appeal that maybe you thought, or maybe it's only got one bathroom and folks are like, yeah, everybody wants two bathrooms now. Like there are just a host of factors that could influence that specific property. Mm-hmm. As opposed to spreading that risk out, which is what you do when you invest in the market as a whole, in the stock market. But real estate is also not ubiquitous because I'm thinking about, again, the market. I can log into Fidelity or Vanguard like right now, and I can invest more money if I want to. I can easily log in and snag more shares of my favorite index fund, which is Vanguard's S&P 500, by the way, mm-hmm. VOO. And so if you're looking to find a solid real estate investment, there's no guarantee that one even exists in your market, at least at the moment, right? There's just a limited supply of homes out there, but there's an even smaller supply of properties that will be effective for you as a rental that's going to give you that return on your investment.
Yeah, we were just looking at the graph, Matt, just this week of the supply of homes available in the United States.
Oh my gosh.
And it's still pretty close to an all-time low. And so when you think about that, the fact that there's very little supply, well, how many of those are actually going to make good rentals too? Because there's million-dollar homes on the market that almost never make good rentals. Yeah. It's usually the less expensive homes that make for a great rental property. And so when you're talking about a low supply, high demand, higher prices, higher interest rates, you're just really are talking about like all of those factors kind of pushing against the likelihood that you're going to be able to find a great rental property.
Exactly. But now that we've been negative Nellies, we can talk about some of the questions to ask yourself to know whether or not taking the plunge into real estate is going to be the right move for you. And we'll get to those questions right after this. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, let's keep talking about real estate and whether investing in real estate makes sense for people. Man, I feel like we have been pretty down so far on investing in real estate, which is so funny because if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have had a very, very positive, upbeat way of thinking and talking about investing in real estate. But like I said at the beginning, like factors on the ground change. And if real estate was priced at 2013 levels, I would be still probably singing the same tune that I was, but it's just not as easy to become a real estate investor in 2023 as it was a decade ago.
In a sense, we're kind of like financial journalists, right? As the facts on the ground change, yeah, we should be willing to make sure that we're still reporting what's what is truth. And as we come across new data,
we're the Woodward and Bernstein.
new facts, as new facts on the ground present themselves, we should be able and certainly willing to change our tune slightly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what we're doing here, right? Like, we're not doing a complete 180, but we, like you said, we're much much more hesitant to push people in that direction.
And let's talk about leverage for a second, Matt, because that's a really important part of thinking about investing in real estate. Because, yeah, like we said, real estate is historically a worse investment than the stock market from an overall return standpoint. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it in the most bland way possible. But part of what helps real estate investors earn more than what their stock market investing counterparts are able to earn is smart use of leverage. So it's not just that they're able to force equity in the house, appreciate that property by doing work to it, by like working their butts off, but they are also able to make money because they only have to put a certain percent down on the home that they're buying. And so, yeah, without the ability to take out that loan for the majority of the purchase price, most investors wouldn't even be able to consider buying a rental property. It's like, sorry, move on, go do another investment because you don't have the skin to be able to get into this game.
All right, poor guy, sorry. Right? No investing in real estate for you.
The poorest can't invest in real estate, apparently, right? And so, but leverage can swing either way. And I think a lot of people think of leverage as only a good thing, like, oh, it helps me get into this like $300,000 property that otherwise I'd be unable to purchase. But an intelligent use of debt, it can help make returns look better than they otherwise would, especially in a booming market. You know, putting something like $40,000 down on a $200,000 home that doubled in value over the past 5 years, which is not too far from the truth in some markets, it means that in the simplest terms possible, you turned $40,000 into $200,000 thanks to leverage. So that is how leverage can be beneficial. But The truth is, leverage can also bite you in the butt. I mean, talk to anybody who bought real estate back in 2007. They'll sing the tune of how leverage can work the other way too.
Yeah, and that's not counting the transaction costs of real estate, right? And those are pretty high. But yeah, from the most basic vantage point, that example helps you to see how leverage can accelerate your ability to build wealth. Because if, you know, were you to take that same amount of money and stick it in the market, and even with healthy returns, like a 10% rate of return, you might have only earned something like $25,000 on $40,000 worth of capital within a 5-year time span. But like you said, you do need to be careful because leverage can swing both ways. We are not against using it to your advantage, but it's something that you've got to be very careful with, because were you to be over leveraged and were we to see a massive downturn in the market like we did back during the Great Recession, you would see yourself completely upside down. You would see yourself underwater with your real estate.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you don't have the cash flow to cover your losses, you end up in a really difficult situation that leads to foreclosure for a lot of people. And so investing in real estate, it's just not as straightforward as it is to invest in the market. And so there's potential for bigger returns for savvy real estate investors, but there's also a bigger risk at the same time. So let's talk about, Matt, a few questions, a few things that people need to think through before they decide that real estate investing does make sense for them. So we've got kind of a few factors we want you to consider. First is, how are you doing with those tax advantage retirement accounts? If you don't know what a 401k is, or you haven't considered a Roth IRA yet, first things first. We want you to be at least getting the match from your employer if you're employed at a, you know, full-time gig who offers you a retirement account. That's kind of the minimum threshold, right? Hopefully you've been socking away meaningful amounts for years before you even start thinking about investing in real estate. And it largely because since real estate lacks diversification, we want you putting some money to work for you in the market before you start saving up for that first rental property down payment. I mean, we want you to have just a solid financial foundation, right? We want you to have no high interest rate debt. We want you to have a fully funded emergency fund. You're just not ready to even start looking at properties. You can start learning, right? You can start researching. You can start listening to podcasts and reading books, but you're just not ready to start like hopping on Redfin and Zillow and making offers on properties that are in your neighborhood until you've got a solid financial foundation, until you started investing, I think, in some of the more boring index fund style routes first too.
Yeah, basically we want you to do things in the right order. And it starts with, like you said, Joel, having some margin in your life, an emergency fund, but getting rid of that high interest rate debt, but then also making sure you are invested in the most simple of ways before you then start saving up for that first investment property.
It's kind of like becoming a parent before becoming a grandparent. You just kind of got to do it, right?
Well, yeah. There's only one way you do that, though, whereas you can get out of order.
You could do it. Yeah. You could get this one out of order, but we don't want you to.
Yeah. And so after you have that financial foundation, you need to have a down payment saved up. You'll not only need the money to put probably 25% down on the unit that you want to purchase, but you'll need...
That's what most lenders want from you as a real estate investor, 25% down.
But beyond that, you're going to need a fair amount of additional cash to just get it into shape. for renting. And you'll want to have reserves on hand to pay for any potential major upgrades or major expenses, unforeseen expenses that might pop up. And so this is in addition to what you're sticking into your traditional investment accounts, and in addition to the cash that's sitting in your own personal emergency fund for your personal emergencies. Essentially, it's like having an emergency fund for each of your properties, basically.
And it's so true. I mean, there's always something that's needed at rental properties. I'm doing work at multiple rental properties as we speak, Matt. Not me, but I have people that I'm hiring to do the work. Putting in a whole new bathroom in one unit. And so these are the kind of things that you have to be ready for these upgrades, expenses. It's not cheap and it's a long-term play, but you got to have the cash flow and you got to have the reserves to cover those upgrades that are necessary. Definitely don't want to get caught off guard. That would be a bad place to be if you're going to be investing in real estate. You're right. You need a significant amount of extra cash on hand, or you should probably not consider it at all. All right. You also need to think about what market you're in, because real estate is a very local thing. We've been giving kind of some generalized numbers about how real estate performs, but so much depends, right? Real estate is about location, 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 and it's about specific location, but it's also about just like what part of the country do you live in? So if you live in like New York City, San Francisco, it would likely mean losing money each and every month in hopes that that property would appreciate and that would pan out in the end, that would make that a good investment. Mm-hmm. Incredibly expensive markets make it ridiculously difficult to invest and make money. But there are lots of other markets where investor opportunity still exists. And even though the market has, from a broad national standpoint, made it more difficult to find deals that make sense for real estate investors, some markets still have homes for sale that are going to be profitable. And where you live is just going to have a massive influence on whether or not you opt to invest. Long distance is possible, but that's just another can of worms. So where you live, the kind of deals that are available in your neighborhood or in surrounding neighborhoods, that's probably going to have an impact on whether or not you decide to proceed. You might say, no, wait a second, I am living in downtown Los Angeles and there are no deals to be had that would make sense from an investing standpoint. But you might say, I live in Cincinnati and actually there's some good quads right around the corner, quadplexes, and maybe I'll buy one of those. I ran the numbers, actually look really good. So again, so much of it comes down to where you live and if the deals exist, where you are.
That's right, yeah. This is a very broad brush that I'm painting with here, but generally speaking, on the coast, it's way more expensive versus buying and investing in the heartland or in the Sun Belt, where more and more folks happen to be moving to these days. But just because you are in the right market, though, and just because you've got your financial ducks all lined up, it's still not a slam dunk decision that you should invest in real estate, because you also need to want to invest in real estate.
You gotta have that desire.
You need to have that fire. If you aren't even interested in learning about the mechanics of real estate, like, that's okay. Because the nice thing about investing in the stock market is that you don't need to know very much in order to land in the index funds rule camp.
You can get rich while being blissfully ignorant, which I think is the best part about index funds. It's like you can be like
completely removed from your day to day. It's completely removed from how it is that you think about things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Real estate investing is going to take more due diligence. And if the desire isn't there, like it's going to just quickly begin to feel like a slog. And it's okay to work for those profits. But it's even more fulfilling when it's something that you enjoy, when it's something that you are excited about, as opposed to something where you're just like, ugh, don't want to have to deal with that. Think about what you actually want your life to look like and what you want to spend your time doing.
I think that's a great point, because some people are like, I feel like I'm supposed to. That's the next step in wealth building. But no, you don't have to if you don't want to. And if it interests you, if it piques your interest, like I always liked it. Like I always found it to be like fun and fascinating and like a learning experience. But not everybody feels that way. And other people are like, I want my weekends to be my weekends. And it's not that being a real estate investor means all your weekends are going to be spent working on that property. Probably not. But it's important to have the desire, because there are inevitably going to be times when you've got to devote attention to that rental property when you'd rather be doing something else. And so you're like, if it annoys the ever-living crap out of you, then it's probably not meant for you.
And this is a rare instance in investing where I think it makes sense to say, follow your heart.
Yeah, which is rarely the best advice in investing.
Rarely, exactly. But in this case, like, we're talking about how you're spending your time, what you want your days and your hours to look like.
And I kind of like architecture, and I like these. I like street to street, and I like that kind of, so I'm, my interest,
especially in the old neighborhoods in town.
Right. Yeah. My interests align with this form of investing. So to me, that actually made it make more sense. And so that makes me think, it's not just desire, but do you have the time to do this? Because that's another important question, another important filter to run this decision through. Do you have the time that it takes to be a real estate investor? Because, you know, a significant amount of both are going to be necessary to make this a success. And you know, we've talked about how it's not passive income. It has aspects of a part-time job to it. But I just want to drive that point home because there are so many folks out there preaching the exact opposite message. They're talking about the passive income side of things, but time and effort really are required to be a successful real estate investor. And so I would say count the cost before you proceed. That's really important. If you're working a full-time job, so is your spouse, and you want to be at your kids' soccer games on the weekend, all the above, well, real estate investing might eat into that. And so it's important to figure out whether or not you've actually got the time to commit to this new endeavor because, yeah, it's going to take some time.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So even if you've got the desire, you're in a great market and you've got the time and you've got the money, well, it's also worth considering that you might already have a decent amount of local real estate exposure already via your primary residence, right? And so this isn't to say that, quote unquote, investing in the home where you live, like that is the most optimal way to invest in real estate, but it is the reality for American homeowners. At least 65% of Americans' net worth is tied up in their homes. Dude, like that is a lot of eggs in a singular basket. Mm-hmm. And we're not against buying a primary residence that you love. But it is a good idea to consider how buying some additional local real estate, how that will impact the diversity of your overall portfolio.
Especially if we're talking like, hey, I've been maxing out my Roth for 2 years. That's all you've done in the market. But you own a primary home and now you're looking to buy a rental property.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got $12,500 sitting there, or hopefully a little bit more with gains in the market. But if that's all you got, then yeah, maybe you want a little more exposure, broadly speaking, mm-hmm. across all the companies located here in the U.S. or that trade on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Before sinking a significantly larger amount than that into a local piece of property via a down payment.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to that diversification point that we made earlier a little bit. And a lot of people are not diversified in terms of their net worth because so much of it is tied up in their home. They think of that as their forced method of savings, as their way to retirement. But your primary home isn't typically a great investment. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But we also want to talk about alternatives to buying actual physical real estate. Do any of those make sense for investors who want to grow their net worth? We'll get to all that right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are still talking about investing in real estate. And the good news is that even if you feel completely overwhelmed by what we've said so far, you can still participate in seeing your net worth grow by investing in real estate.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's say you've heard us talking. It sounds like it's too much work. Let's talk about a few alternative ways to get exposure to real estate as an asset class. And REITs, which stand for Real Estate Investment Trusts, they are the main way to gain some of that that hassle-free exposure to real estate. And there are a couple different types that we're going to talk about today. And E-REITs are becoming more and more popular. And E-REITs basically mean the REITs available through specific investing platforms, of which Fundrise tends to be the best of the bunch.
Yeah, probably the most popular too.
But even still, this isn't our favorite way for folks to invest in real estate, largely because of the pretty hefty fees. We're talking 1%. There's just added complexity as well. And just how tied up your money is, even though it is, you know, it is easier than actually buying a duplex. And their website, the apps, they make it really easy to invest as well. But like, honestly, I almost see this as a downside, because it could mean that investors, they just run the risk of having not performed their due diligence, right? Yeah. If you're kind of just sitting back and you're thinking, oh, I want to be a real estate investor. Swoop, 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 swoop. And, you know, you double click your side to download the app, you log in, and before you know it, your money's tied up in Wichita, Kansas.
Right.
And you haven't given much thought to whether or not you are going to need access to those funds in 2 months.
Well, and the truth is that when we're talking about investing in real estate, it's a non-liquid form of investment. It's hard to sell that property anyway, and if you try to sell it in a short time frame, you're going to lose money, like we talked about earlier. So the same thing is true with these E-REITs, where your money is often locked up for a number of years. But you're right, a lot of people don't realize that on the front end, or they haven't thought it through long enough before they make that purchase.
Yeah.
So real estate is just illiquid in general, unless we're talking about publicly traded REITs, which are different.
That is true.
Publicly traded real estate investment trusts, they're a better option for a lot of folks. If you want to invest in real estate, let's say from the comfort of your couch and by a few clicks on your smartphone. And what we mean by that is like a specific REIT fund. And this fund that you could invest in, it itself invests in a ton of different REITs that are offered by, you know, some of our favorite brokerage companies. And so you're talking about investing in real estate all across the country in different kinds of real estate. You might be talking about office real estate. You might be talking about hospitals. You might be talking
about cell phone towers.
Cell phone towers. Yeah. All sorts of different real estate classes. And so VNQ, for instance, is a solid fund that Vanguard offers if you want to invest in real estate, but you want to have that investment be somewhat liquid. SCHH from Charles Schwab. That's a great one too.
Shh.
Yeah. Shut up. And like this is a great way to invest in real estate passively, but in a diversified manner.
Mm-hmm.
But know this, it's not doing much actually for you on the diversification front. So if you're like, I want some real estate exposure, these publicly traded REITs, they sound like, you know, the costs are low and I can get in and out when I want to. Well, maybe they'll diversify me from my total stock market holdings. That might be the best solution for me. Well, it's important to note that because you're already plenty diversified by holding hundreds or even thousands of stocks in that total
right.
stock market fund or the S&P 500 index fund.
Because again, you are doing that first before uh-huh. you are investing in real estate.
Right.
Right.
But yes, as you should be. But then you start adding a little bit of VNQ or something in there, which is that Vanguard REIT fund I was talking about. Well, most, if not all, of the 167 companies that VNQ is investing in are already a part of the total stock market fund that you got. Right. So if you're investing in VTI, right, which is the ETF that's
your favorite, right? That's
yeah.
Vanguard's total stock market ETF.
That's a killer one, right? If you're investing in that, well, you're already kind of by proxy investing in VNQ, and so you might not necessarily need additional exposure. So for a lot of people, it's probably, like I said, more trouble than it's worth.
That's right. Yeah, and you also don't have to be fully team VTI. You can also come over to my side and join team VU.
They're both very similar and both wonderful.
Syndication deals. This is another way to invest in real estate in a more passive manner. And that basically means just investing in other people's real estate deals, in other folks, in other companies' real estate deals. So oftentimes you're coming alongside other investors to, say, purchase an apartment complex. Joel, this is something that you've done a couple times, but if you pick the right operator, the right investment, it can definitely work out well. But the problem with these is that there's a massive barrier to entry. A lot of them won't accept an investment less than $50,000.
Yeah. Some will start as low as like 20 or 25, but you're right. A lot of them say no.
50
is the minimum. And so it's hard for them. It's just the same as trying to save up that down payment. If that's kind of what's prohibiting you from buying the property in your area, like, oh, I got to save up that down payment. Well, the syndication deals definitely don't make sense for you either.
Exactly.
Because it's a big slog to save up that kind of money. So, yeah, but I think syndication deals they're interesting, but you've got to be really careful in that space too, because there are a lot of crafty salespeople who want to make their syndication deal sound like the greatest thing since sliced bread. You're going to get rich in just 3 to 4 years' time. But how conservative are their projections, and what kind of operator are they? Like, can you trust that they're going to be able to perform? And so it makes, you have to do a lot of due diligence on those deals too, which makes it not necessarily passive either.
Yeah, that's right. It takes some time to know what it is that you're getting into, especially with a buy-in at that level.
Yeah.
And so if you're unfazed by all of these different roadblocks that we've mentioned during this episode, it just might make sense for you to start learning a little bit more. So we wanted to mention a couple of resources that we think can be helpful as you're trying to increase your knowledge when it comes to investing in real estate. And Bigger Pockets is a great website. They've got a solid forum where investors can help each other out, ask and answer questions. Coach Carson, he is a good friend of ours, and we love his philosophy when it comes to investing in real estate. He's all about reaching what he calls small but mighty real estate investors.
Yeah, I love that approach.
He thinks a lot like a mighty mouse sort of take when it comes to real estate.
He takes the approach like if you buy maybe one property every 2 years, and then you seek to pay that off until you reach retirement age, like you can get really, really rich buying having just a handful of investment properties. And I like that because sometimes you'll hear people talking about, like, you know, thousands of units or hundreds of units, and it feels so inaccessible. And the way Coach Carson talks about it feels and seems and is, I think, very accessible for people who are interested in investing in real estate.
Yeah, for folks who are looking for it to be like a sustainable part of your lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's what Coach Carson does. We'll link to those resources in our show notes, but they can help you to get up to speed quickly. And The Millionaire Real Estate Investor, that's actually the first book I ever read on investing in real estate. That's Gary Keller.
I thought you were going to say that's actually the first book you ever read.
That's impressive, Matt.
You were like 4 years old.
Yeah. No, but this... It's a fantastic book that covers all of the basics. And so if you're looking for like a comprehensive manual, I would highly recommend that book as well.
I think there's a lot of great resources. And so if you're like, yeah, the market conditions, they don't seem favorable right now based on what I'm seeing, based on what Matt and Joel are talking about, well, at least start doing the research, because you never know. Maybe in 6 months or a year's time, the winds change, right? The market conditions change, and we're starting to see more deals, more inventory on the market. So having that knowledge and getting prepared is never a bad thing.
That's right. It pays to dig the well before you need it.
Yes, like our friend Jordan Harbinger says, dig the well before you're thirsty.
The well of knowledge is what we're talking
yes.
about here.
Yes. I'm still impressed with you reading those books of that magnitude at four. But
I was a quick reader.
Yeah, smart kid.
Zip through it in 1 week.
You know, I think a way that people can gently ease into investing in real estate, kind of like the Chad Carson method, and it's actually the way that I first got into investment real estate, is by transitioning your primary residence into an investment property. And basically, if you've got a locked-in low mortgage rate in a neighborhood that has good long-term prospects, and if the numbers on that home that you own actually make sense, if that's the case for you, then it might be a good idea for you to save up enough so that you don't have to sell the current place you're living in when you buy your next place. And this is just a great way that a lot of landlords are able to get started. You're familiar with the home and its quirks, and the barrier to entry is lowered because you're buying the next home as a primary residence, which means you get better financing, which means you have to come to the table with less money down. And so, Matt, you and I, we've both done this a couple of times, and it doesn't make sense for everyone. If you're living in a million-dollar home or $750,000, 4,000-square-foot home, it's unlikely to be a great rental from a number standpoint. So it depends on the specifics of your property. But I just love this as a way for people to get into real estate investing. If you're kind of living in a starter home and you're ready to upgrade, well, instead of selling that home and using your equity to kind of buy, help you purchase a bigger home, keep that home and save up the down payment for that next home. That's just a really excellent strategy for a lot of people to get going.
That's right. Yeah. Well, house hacking, that's another way for first-time investors to that also get into the landlording game. And so whether that's buying a single-family house where maybe you're just renting out, you know, just a portion of it, like a room where you've got roommates, or even a duplex or a quad, but buying something that you can live in that also generates income, that makes a ton of sense. For lots of folks, it can just be a way to minimize their housing costs in a pretty major way, allowing you to then save up even more money for that next real estate investment much more quickly mm-hmm. than you otherwise would be able to. We talked with real estate investor Craig Kierlop back in episode 445, and he might have the most inspiring story when it comes to house hacking.
Well, he's done it a bunch of different ways.
He's done it multiple times, multiple different ways, one of which was the home that he owned. He was sleeping in the living room and he had partitioned off his, he basically made a room. He's like, no, this is my house. So living room is now a bedroom. Well, he got to decide.
And you don't have to do it as hardcore as Craig did necessarily. Like in his book, he outlines.
You can have an actual room with a bathroom if you'd like.
Yeah. And he outlines multiple ways to do it. And it takes some sacrifice, right? It's house hacking is not for the faint of heart necessarily, but it can completely change your financial trajectory. Taking on roommates or buying a house that has like a basement apartment that you can rent out, whether it's on Airbnb or whether it's full time to a tenant. Like those are the kind of things that can really completely change your finances moving forward because you're able to generate a whole lot more income or maybe even like live for free. Think of what you could do if you were living for free. Think of how much you could save and invest and start banking towards like future projects. Like it's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And again, Matt, it's like amazing how much our tunes have changed on real estate investing. When the price is right, you know, we think it can make a lot of sense for folks who have the real estate investing bug to take the plunge. And even just 2.5 or 3 years ago, I think it was possible to find deals that made sense in Atlanta where we live. Although even then it was getting harder. And today it's just gotten incredibly difficult to make the numbers work unless you're willing to take those more intense approaches like house hacking. But that's our location, right? That's where we live. And even still, it's not that it's impossible to find something that's worth investing in, but it's important to figure out what your town or city dynamics are like before swearing it off altogether or before jumping in with both feet. I think I still like the path of real estate investing for a whole lot of people. It's just that it's more difficult than it has been in a long time to actually start going down that path.
Absolutely. And if there's one thing I think that prevents folks from investing in real estate when it actually makes sense for them, right? Like if they have run the numbers, if they have thought through how this is going to impact their personal life, I think it's just being afraid to take the risks, right? Like there can be a fear that can keep people from maybe achieving some of their financial goals even faster than they would have. Otherwise, obviously real estate investing is not for everyone, but we don't want the work part of this to freak you out because like buying the right property, finding it at the right price and managing that property effectively, that can just be a great way to grow your net worth over time. And again, depending on where you live and where you are with your financial goals, now might actually be a really solid time to buy a great property. But we recorded this episode, made this a topic because we wanted to make sure that you were equipped with all of the different factors to think through before taking the plunge, right? Yeah. Before entertaining the idea of, all right, maybe it's time for me to get fancy with my investments. And I shouldn't have even said that because I think a part of what we wanted to do with this episode is to be realistic about where the market is currently, but we don't want to build up investing in real estate as this massive, unattainable thing. It's honestly, it truly isn't all that complicated. Yeah. We think it's something that you can do as well.
But it's also not the savior that's going to lead you to financial independence like a lot of people would say too. So we want like a rational, level-headed approach to real estate, which that was kind of what we were trying to do today. I hope that helps. But I think one of the other things too, Matt, I want to say is that we were talking about the harsh realities of investing in real estate. And the truth is that the current market conditions make it more difficult. But I think some of the harsh realities are also overblown, like 3 a.m. toilet malfunctions and your tenant calling you. Some of the horror stories that you hear from real estate investors are a little over the top as well. And so I just want people to know that going into it. It's not like you're getting a call from your tenant twice a week in the middle of the night because your house is on fire or something like that. And I think that those kinds of things, it's kind of like how maybe we freaked out about crazy stuff in Halloween candy in like the 80s or something like that. It's like it became this full-blown panic from, I don't know if you go back and look at it.
The Halloween candy panic.
It's not like it was a real problem, right? But we made it into this thing, and countless articles were written about it, countless discussions on stuff like the Today Show or whatever. But while the occasional inconvenience does happen as a landlord, don't let those stories and don't let those the hyperbolic nature of some of those discussions scare you, put fear into your heart, like prevent you from even kind of thinking about doing this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right, let's shift gears. Let's get back to the beer that you and I drank during this episode. And this is an Us Alive. I think that's how they wanted us to read it.
You're hired, I think.
This is a beer by McKellar. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I wasn't too impressed.
No,
I was hoping for more.
It's a Belgian wild ale, by the way.
And I like wilds a lot, typically. But this one was like kind of like a brown ale with a little bit of funk, kind of sweet.
I'm a little surprised, I guess, because I am in agreement with you.
Okay.
It kind of had like this, like it definitely had the funkiness going on from the Brett, the Brettanomyces, and it had the fruity sort of Belgian vibes going on that you typically can expect with a Belgian.
It was something, it definitely had like Belgian yeast flavors and vibes going on.
So I had this weird kind of like stinky funkiness combined with like funky fruitiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never ever described a beer this way, but it reminded me of like a baby's dirty diaper.
Well, now you're selling everybody on it.
You know, so like oftentimes like the fancier diapers, they come scented. And so they kind of have like this floral, not fruitiness, but it's almost like there is a fruity scent kind of masking the underlying stinky funkiness. You know what I'm talking about?
I hear you.
Okay. So that's kind of what this beer did in beer form. Uh-huh. I'm not saying that this beer tasted like a baby's diaper, but the dynamics that you typically find with...
Because your glass is empty over there. So maybe you're a glutton for punishment. I don't know.
I eat all my leftovers, Joel. I drink all my... Well, except that one beer I talked about earlier. I did pour down the drink because that Joker was bad.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a terrible beer. It wasn't my absolute favorite. And so I'll just say that it was aight.
Yeah.
It was okay.
I'm typically a huge fan of McKellar beers, but this one was the least favorite I've ever had from them.
Yeah, kind of missed the mark for us.
Man, they've had some really good beers over there.
Oh, well, absolutely.
So hopefully we'll get on track with the next McKellar beer that we have on the show. So.
And who knows, maybe this one was a little past its date
could
as well.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we will link to some of the different resources that we mentioned during this episode, some of the past conversations we've had with other guests. In particular, I guess we just mentioned Craig Kurlop when it comes to house hacking. But you can find those resources up in our show notes at howtomoney.com.
That's right.
But Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.